Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Every day, sports happens.
It never stops.
And neither do we. Get the expert perspectives you need, strategies and vital information you won't get anywhere else. You're listening to the home of the Winning Edge. This is Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM.
Welcome in to the Early Line, live right here on Sports Grid on a Wednesday morning. I am Kevin Walsh, joined, of course, by Donnie Wrightside. Donnie, how are we feeling?
Feeling good, man. I mean, yesterday you had 2 epic baseball games here with some wild finishes in both of them. And then also you take a look at opening night in the NBA. You had 2 games, star-studded affairs, full slate of NBA tonight. The NFL gets back into our lives on Thursday night. What a way to get hump day underway here, Kevin, on a Wednesday.
No doubt. The baseball games went absolutely wild. We'll get there in just a moment. But want to start it off with our 7-7 top headlines in the association. NBA opening night, the defending champs, the Milwaukee Bucks, get it done against the Brooklyn Nets, 127-104. The pathetic Brooklyn Nets couldn't help that game get over the total. Giannis, 32 points, 14 rebounds, 7 assists. This team lost Drew Holiday in the second quarter, Donnie, and it didn't matter. They came out and looked tremendous on opening night.
Yeah, 2 deep teams, but the depth obviously on the Bucks showed out a little bit stronger here. What a night here. You know, you raise the banner, you get your giant rings, throw them on your finger, and then you slap the Brooklyn Nets around and drop them by 23 points. What does it mean long-term in the season? Not much here, right? I mean, it's an 82-game season, so game one, nobody's going to, hey, we lost this game, we got to fight back and see what we can do. No, that's not the case here. 2 veteran-laden teams, they're going to meet a lot during the regular season and certainly probably in the postseason as well, but you can't knock the hustle last night. The Bucks were tremendous, and they blew the doors off the Nets.
One thing, we'll talk about it, the Nets with phantom minutes restrictions maybe on their 2 stars that nobody knew about certainly doesn't help prop players. Also last night, Steph Curry gets a triple-double in the Golden State Warriors win against the Lakers. I actually can't help but smile. Up against Mr. Triple-Double himself, he only checked in as a minus 23 for the Lakers in their 7-point loss to Golden State.
Yeah, brutal opening game here for Westbrook, but your superstars played well, LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And also keep in mind, listen on the FanDuel Sportsbook, 2 interesting things here. Yeah. Steph Curry to make 5 triples and a Golden State victory paid out nicely here. The only problem is you severely scored 121 points. He easily had 5 triples since they won. Not the case. And how about the other side of the coin we talked about, Kevin? Anthony Davis, if he had a double-double or just 10 rebounds or more and the Lakers won, it paid out 340. Well, he did that both ways, but the Lakers just didn't win. Interesting night out in LA, but a big time win for the Warriors.
It certainly was. Steph only made 5 field goals. I prefer to harp on the fact that LeBron, year 19, looked absolutely wonderful. Some other updates from the association. Ben Simmons, thrown out of practice, suspended by the Sixers. Oh, me, oh, my, Johnny. It ain't all friendly down there in the city of brotherly love.
No, it's certainly not. And this is how you move up in the city standings here in Philadelphia. Zach Ertz gets traded, takes out a complete, you know, back page and says, I love this place. It'll always be home. Man, what a great guy, moves on. Then you have guys like Ben Simmons who don't want to be here, but also Joel Embiid moving up. I don't know if Joel Embiid could get any more of a fan favorite in Philadelphia by basically saying, like, I don't even care about this man anymore, and I'm not going to babysit him. We're here to play basketball. I mean, Joel is king of the city right now, when it should have been him and Ben riding into the sunset with multiple championships. Now, it's just Ben Simmons riding into the sunset.
We will break that team down. They play against the Pelicans. I did like people saying, man, I like that Joel Embiid is finally just being honest about Ben Simmons. Ah, nobody listened to his press conference after their loss to the Atlanta Hawks, where he was honest right away. Welcome into the radio audience. Appreciate all those listening to the Early Line on Sports Grid Radio. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside with you on a Wednesday morning, going through our top headlines here. One more from the NBA, Donnie. A double-digit slate tonight for the NBA. Unfortunately, though, we will not see the number one overall pick, Cade Cunningham, make his debut as Detroit opens up against the Bulls.
Yeah, the volatility of the rookie of the year markets, Kevin. We see it in the NFL. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to miss the opening start. No way, Kevin. No way he could be rookie of the year now. Oh, what a tough season already for Cunningham. Settle down, people. Let him get on the court. Let him get healthy. The Pistons aren't going anywhere this year. Your only thing is to let your young superstar be healthy, play effective basketball, and see what you can do in the future.
I think it's a little bit of a boost, maybe, if anybody out there thinks the Chicago Bulls make the playoffs. Switching it over to playoff baseball. Oh, my word. Braves, Dodgers, let's start here. 6-5, the Dodgers win. They cruised 2 in the first. No, they did not cruise. They had a gigantic 4-run eighth inning. A Cody Bellinger 3-run shot tied it at 5-5. A 2-out Mookie Betts double made it 6-5. And the Dodgers maybe save their season and avoided a 3-0 hole.
Yeah, in this game, I thought the Dodgers would win, which they did, and I thought the game would stay under, which did not happen here. What an amazing performance by the Dodgers. Clutch players coming up big in the biggest moments. Cody Bellinger hasn't had a great season by any stretch, but a massive 3-run shot in the eighth inning propels them to a victory. And how about Kenley Jansen coming in the ninth inning under the toughest circumstances you can have to close out a big game with your team needing a win? 1-2-3, all by strikeout. Big-time win by the Dodgers. Now, could they be back in the driver's seat?
We'll update you on those lines. We've also got to update you on Houston, Boston. Listen, we respect the overbackers here. Feel bad for the underbetters here, Donnie. A 7th run, 9th inning for the Houston Astros. They even the series at 9-2.
And the damage with 2 outs as well. Who would have said going into the inning, 2-2, this game's going to be an easy under. Amazing over. Think crazy things happened yesterday in MLB for sure.
Also, during Hot or Not, we'll talk about the Cleveland Browns, as banged up as it gets on the heels of Thursday Night Football. Baker Mayfield is questionable for the game and might need season-ending surgery. NBA talks up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on the Early Line, let's talk a little bit about the two-pack of NBA that we saw last night. Bucks, Nets, Lakers, Warriors. We'll start it off banner night in Milwaukee. Certainly no championship hangover for this group here. 127-104, the final score. And I want to start by giving Milwaukee their credit, if Brooklyn is the bigger story here. Giannis, Donnie, a plus 25. Middleton checked in, a plus 20. And Drew Holiday only played 18 minutes and was a plus 17. At home, they're going to be tough to beat. When their big three all shows up in this fashion, they're going to be nearly impossible to beat, especially once again at home. Milwaukee was dominant to start their season.
Oh, you're right, and you're taking a look at everything going right for a home opener for the Bucks, right? Kyrie Irving isn't going to be able to make the trip, obviously, still waiting on his vaccinated status. But the Nets were still a really good basketball team. So you weren't getting a half of a punch from the Brooklyn Nets as, we're just going to roll up the carpet tonight and blow them off the court. You had to play and play well, and they did that. And you're right, the superstars for the Bucks came up big. If you're trying to take a look at what possibly went wrong for the Nets, you know, Kevin Durant, a little bit of a sluggish start here, but 13 of 25 from the field, that's about what you expect. James Harden got 20 points, 8 assists, and 8 rebounds. If he played the fourth quarter, easily could have had a triple-double, which we were trying to bank on. But the role players here did not show up, per se, for the Nets. Outside of Patty Mills, who was absolutely spectacular, 7 for 7 from three-point range. Imagine if Patty Mills just had an average game and shot, I don't know, 2 for 7 from three-point range. Is it a 30-point blowout loss? Because he was the guy in the first half, Kevin, that was the catalyst for even keeping the game close for the Brooklyn Nets. Mm-hmm. You also take a look at some guys coming off the bench. Carter, the backup point guard out of West Virginia, minus 29 in 19 minutes. Talk about not being efficient on the court. But if you watch this basketball game, Kevin, for me, all the way through first quarter to fourth quarter, it was always the Milwaukee Bucks being the better team. You were just hoping that the Nets could make a run and get back in it, which they did multiple times. But just too much in this game. Even when you entered the fourth quarter, what were we saying? All right, here's our last push, Durant and Harden.
Yep.
There was no push at all. It's almost like they just waved the white flag. It's like, ah, it's all good. It's only one game. Let's just ease into this. Don't get anybody injured.
Their 19-point fourth quarter performance crushed the over. Crushed my heart last night. A delicious welcome back from the NBA, as only it could. I'll make this thing, though, quick on Milwaukee here. This team routinely was winning 60-plus games before last season. This team has always been tough to beat at home. I don't think you're going to see another team walk into their building as a 1.5-point underdog, and certainly nobody's walking into this building, assuming their Bucks are going to send their entire lineup to the start and get there as a favorite. It's not going to happen. Not the Nets, not the Lakers, not the Jazz, not the Suns. Milwaukee at home is likely going to be laying at least 3 or more points in all of their games moving forward, and they should. Giannis, by the way, went down now to a co-favorite with Luka Doncic for the MVP after the game. Game one award moves are ridiculous. I don't know what they thought was going to happen. The one thing I will say is, I get it. Giannis probably just should have been a co-favorite with Luka to win the award. One of them is on the defending champion and is supposed to be no worse than a top three seed in his conference. The other, people are out there betting to make the play-in in terms of the Dallas Mavericks, so I understand that move. But on the Brooklyn side of things, Donnie, and I remember last year vividly the Lakers' opening game of the season against the Clippers. They just, in the middle of the fourth quarter, went, we don't want to be here, actually. Benched LeBron, benched AD. It was like, whoa. Nobody told us this was going to happen. A little bit of vibe of that from Brooklyn to me in the fourth quarter. I'm not saying they didn't try. First quarter, they all tried, no doubt. But Steve Nash just staggered Durant and Harden minutes. They were on the floor together after the opening quarter for a shockingly small amount of time. Harden, 31 minutes. Durant, 30 minutes. That doesn't feel like a mistake to me overall. And it makes Brooklyn difficult, I guess, moving forward, because if they're not going to, again, give you a full slate of minutes from their big two, yep, while Kyrie's at home, that's not a team I'm desperate to back, especially when they're going to be big favorites more often than not.
No, you're right. And I think also, Kevin, it was opening night, right? So it's a long season. We know that. We're still in playoff betting mode, it seems like, for us, because that was a big game last night, as if it was, or felt like, a playoff game.
Yeah.
So we're expecting everybody to play, you know, or let's just say everybody in the top 8 or 9 in the rotation. You're expecting guys to play big minutes. Everything's going to be on the line. That wasn't the case. So you're right. I don't think that was a, you know, minor move here where Harden played 31 minutes and Durant played 30, saying to themselves, the same way the NBA plays out, which is tough because it's 82 games. What's more important here for the Brooklyn Nets? To get the number one overall seed or get their superstars to the playoffs rested, ready, and healthy at this point? And maybe you're seeing that will be the game plan. Now, as the season moves on, they're going to play more and more each time. Maybe Durant will get 36 minutes one night, Harden 36 minutes the night after that. But it looks like now, just starting the season, there was no need or no press for urgency, Kevin, to make sure they played 40 minutes and absolutely took this game down to the wire. Because when James Harden doesn't reappear back in the game with like the last 9 minutes to go, it is what it is. And that looks like that's what their MO is going to be during the regular season here. Let's just get healthy.
Yeah, Brooklyn's next game, interestingly enough, will be a Friday night spot in Philadelphia. We'll see who is all available for that matchup. Looking at the night game here, Don, the Warriors win as 3-point underdogs, 121 to 114. Game gets over the number as well. A good push even down the backstretch there to get it comfortably over the number. Wish game one had that. I think it is right, though, to start on the Lakers here. The new look Lakers. LeBron, 34, 11, 5, 5 made threes. AD, 33, 11, 15 of 26 from the floor. Both of them a minus 2. But again, I don't know how the story isn't Russell Westbrook here. 8 points, 4 of 13 shooting, 0 for 4 from 3, and a minus 23 for the Lakers in this game.
Yeah, Russ hasn't been in this situation for a while, which is like, hey, I'm actually not the first, second, or probably third best player on this basketball team. I'm much more down, but he's used to being in the spotlight, Kevin. And I've ripped Russell Westbrook for a long time because it was apparent in Oklahoma City. I used to say he's in heaven there. Why? They're never going to win anything. They clear out the paint to make sure he gets triple-doubles on rebounds if they need him late in basketball games. He is the show, and that's what he thrives off of. You know, the truth serum, mm-hmm. I used to say. If Russell Westbrook, if somebody said, all right, you know, we're going to give him true serum, what would you rather do, win a championship or have triple-doubles every night? By far, it would be triple-doubles every night. So now he's in more of a team concept here where Anthony Davis is the superstar. LeBron James is the superstar. You have to be the facilitator and take a step back. But also, let's keep in mind here, when your offense starts to break down, we just talked about Ben Simmons. The offensive flow where everybody gets wide-open shots is all five guys participate, all five guys can hit open jumpers and are willing to take them. If you are a point guard who is a driver first and a scorer second and a shooter third, that doesn't work in a team environment here because floor spacing is so key. But when you line up for three and everybody says, I'm not leaving the paint here, take all those threes you want, that has a devastating outcome here on the way you run your offense. But if you are a Laker fan and backer, the fact that you saw last night, AD with 33, mm-hmm. LeBron with 34, you build off of that and say, my big two are good to go. Let's just figure out the rest here.
I think Donnie's absolutely right. And I've watched Frank Vogel tinker with rotations during playoff games. He'll eventually kind of figure out a role here. I think Donnie's spot on. The bigger takeaway for the Lakers, LeBron looks like he's still easily a top five player in the sport, and AD maybe not far behind. There's still some bench pieces that are going to have to check in, although Carmelo can hit the bricks. He's pump-faking free throws. I mean, that is just a preposterous thing, and I have no idea how that happened. No panic on the Lakers. LeBron, though, is 0-4 opening night since joining the Lakers. A very odd stat, but certainly now a trend. On Golden State, Donnie, Steph Curry was 5 of 21. They won this game by 7 points on the road. I can see why people are buying in. It's a better roster. They've got a tremendous night out of Belicia. Jordan Poole firing away. Draymond Green stepping up for, you know, his typical 8 rebounds, 6 assists, a little bit of a do-it-all stuff there from Golden State. This is going to be a team that will be competitive in the West.
Yes, good team, very good team. We'll see. Steph Curry didn't have that MVP night, but you might get a boost here from an MVP performance here of beating the MVP caliber Lakers. Interesting stuff here. We're underway in the NBA.
No doubt, more NBA next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid. Let's start to look at some of the games on the NBA slate tonight. And interestingly enough, one of the main ones has to be Sixers-Pelicans. And it was going to be a big game because it was like, ooh, Ben Simmons with the Sixers. He's suspended. It's unbelievable the way this is all playing out here in Philly. You cannot talk about this game without talking about Ben Simmons. The Sixers are 3-point road favorites. The total is 225.5 right now. But Donnie, your reaction to Ben Simmons being thrown out of practice.
Yeah, it's you could see it coming, right? Like the pictures that we've all been through sporting environments through ourselves, you know, growing up when you know somebody doesn't want to be there or somebody's not giving him their all. And the fact that pictures actually leaked out of Ben Simmons the day before, and if you notice, the entire practice, people are wearing jerseys, either blue or white. You know, that's what you do in practice. The reversible jerseys in high school or college, and we practice. One's on offense, one's on defense, one's first team, one's second team, whatever it is. He wore a cutoff hoodie out there with sweatpants and a phone in his pocket. I'm surprised he made it 5 minutes into that practice. And my favorite part of the entire practice was when everybody breaks it down at the end. All 15 guys, the coaches come in. All right, guys, good workout. Let's break it down on Sixers. 1, 2, 3, Sixers. And you go off into the locker room, and he's in the background, like, twirling a basketball, dribbling it, and not involved whatsoever. I'm actually shocked he made it almost 48 hours in that practice facility without being thrown out. This is ridiculous. But, again, the 76ers are holding back his pay. I don't know how much longer he's going to be a Philadelphia 76er, but I got to tell you, it's kind of interesting watching here in that crystal ball. Like, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen tomorrow here in the Ben Simmons situation.
At the end of the day, I can't imagine a world where he ever plays for the Sixers again. I think what we're realizing is Ben didn't just – like, a lot of players want out because, like, ooh, I can't win. And maybe we didn't talk enough about that's not what's happening here. Like, AD couldn't – felt like he couldn't win in New Orleans. Harden wanted to go play with Durant in Brooklyn, right? Those are different situations. We talk about Dame. Can they get it done in Portland? Ben and the Sixers organization, and specifically – his co-star in Joel Embiid and his head coach in Doc Rivers threw him under the bus when that season ended, and he clearly took it to heart. I'm not defending what Ben did. What he did is outrageous. He should have stayed home. Do not show up to practice and tank a practice. It doesn't help anybody, and that includes yourself. But again, the Sixers are just letting him tank his value. And the idea that Philly fans are saying – we'd rather him lose money than compete.
Yes.
You were the one seed in the conference last year. You need to go get a legitimate return for this guy. I am telling you, Joel Embiid fighting through the play-in, as you get to say, at least Ben Simmons didn't make money, is not the win that you think it is. It starts tonight with New Orleans, Donnie. I think... and by the way, Zion probably not playing for the Pelicans tonight. I think a lot of people back the Sixers tonight under the guidelines of they want to go out there and show Ben Simmons they don't need him. I'm worried about that process, though I understand the vision.
Yeah, they're more talented than the New Orleans Pelicans are, specifically without Zion Williamson. But also, take a look here, Kevin, at the Ben Simmons situation, right? You almost would have more respect for Ben if he just said, I'm turning my phone off on the Sixers. If they want me to come to training camp, I'm not coming. If they want me to play in games, I'm not coming. If I have to lose $25 million, I'm going to make my stand. Some people actually would have respect for that. Like, hey, man, the man's, you know, in his convictions here, and he's not coming back. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Rich Paul then orchestrated this, he's coming back to Philadelphia only to be thrown out, look like an idiot, and also not get paid at the same time. I don't know who's controlling the strings there, but let's get back to the game tonight here. I do think the Sixers overall are the better team. Just look at the starting lineups tonight, even without Ben Simmons. Maxey, Curry, Green, Harris, and Embiid, all getting to the starting gate healthy. You take a look at the New Orleans Pelicans tonight. Devontae Graham, Garrett Temple, Brandon Ingram, Marshall, and Valanciunas. I just think the Sixers are a better overall team, and maybe they are a little bit galvanized here on opening night, as you said, where, hey, we don't need you, Ben. And what better way to get back at a teammate that you can't stand, win without him? Because you know what's a really good, a tough look here? How about, let's just say, the Nets with Kyrie Irving. Let's just say the Nets open up 0-4 to start the season. You know who looks like the winner in all of this? Kyrie Irving, because he must have been the missing piece. Mm-hmm. But if the 76ers open up the season 5-1 or 6-1, Ben Simmons then turns into an afterthought. If the Sixers open up 2-3, 2-4, 2-5, uh-oh, now you got panic mode here in the city of Philadelphia.
I will say the more narrative-driven bet that I'm a little bit more comfortable in this game with is Embiid over 28.5. Embiid is absolutely furious with the Simmons stuff. See, it lines up, right? And JoJo with a purpose is something that I'm more than fine backing there. He was routinely hitting that 30 spot for a bunch of stretches of games last year. I think you could see him getting over the 28.5 spot. A couple of other big games on the slate here tonight. And one interesting one is Kemba Walker going up against this Boston Celtics team that ultimately ended up moving on from him. The Knicks are 2-point home favorites to total a 217 spot, representative of certainly what we saw last year from this Knicks defensive-minded team last year. Boston also, Donnie, first game without Brad Stevens as their head coach.
Yeah, a lot of changes here in this one, but also let's take a look at the Knicks at home in the Garden tonight. Obviously, the Knicks and the Celtics is a great, you know, overall rivalry. But what are we looking forward to here with the Knicks in 2021-2022 heading into it? Is it the same team we saw last year that may have overachieved a little bit and got a little bit too high and mighty, then get knocked down the playoffs from the Atlanta Hawks? Or is this a team that's really built well for the future and says, you know what, we were just missing a few key pieces here. Maybe Kemba Walker can help us get over the hump. Not for a championship, but to win playoff rounds at this time. The one thing you do know is the Celtics are very talented. And just in the starting lineup, Marcus Smart, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. But I'm more concerned here about the Knicks. I don't want to overcompensate from what we saw last year and say, hey, the Knicks are expected to be a top four seed in the East this year. Does this slip down to a play-in? Do they improve it and say, well, the Sixers might not be as good. We can overtake them, at least in the seedings right here. It'll be a fun game to watch at the Garden tonight. But I got to tell you, probably leaning more here towards the Boston Celtics if they're going to be a dog in this one. That's the way I'll go here.
I think that's more than understandable. Talking to our guy JY, he thinks the Knicks are maybe going to run a little bit more this year. Seeing will be believing for me on that team. They were tremendous against the number last season, but also last season Knicks were primarily being booked as dogs in this spot as opposed to favorites. Important note, Al Horford out of this game with COVID. Jaylen Brown also questionable. Those are very, very important players. We talk, again, some player props to follow. How do you not look at Jason Tatum? The 27.5 is big. We know the Knicks defend very well. The last time we saw Tatum, Donnie, he's dropping 50 balls, 40 balls in the postseason against Brooklyn. Again, if Jaylen Brown doesn't play, Kemba's on a new team, no Horford, it's a volume play to me, I think, on Tatum. It could make some legitimate sense there. Enough time, I think, to bring up one more game. Suns Nuggets, Suns in four. Suns lay six. The total's 223. Look, the last time we saw these teams, Donnie, it was completely non-competitive. It looked like a one seed versus a 15 seed at times here. Phoenix, off of their trip to the finals, opened it up at home. DeAndre Ayton, I'm sure, will be a big talking point as well going into this game.
No, big time talking point. You're right. And the motivation should be very high for him to do well, because when you're passed over for a contract that you think you can deserve, what do you want to do? Show the ownership, show the front office, like, look what you passed up here. I just went for 20 and 17 here on opening night, and you're saying you're not going to pay me, so I'm going to make you pay at the end of the season here. But Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, Crowder, and Ayton, this is a really good basketball team, Kevin, but we always like to talk about the teams that win championships like the Milwaukee Bucks. Mm-hmm. Ring ceremony, opening night, blast off, you know, good vibes still, hammer the Nets. Is this one of those teams that might wake up into a malaise here to start the season? Oh, man, we were so close. You know, we had a 2-0 series lead in the NBA Finals. We gave it away. Now here we are opening night again. It's still a really talented team, but also you have the MVP of the NBA coming back on the court with Nikola Jokic. Phoenix is favored by a good amount. Are they the better overall team? I think so. But maybe we want to feed into maybe a little uncertainty here coming into the season for the Suns and see how they react coming off the loss in the finals. I'll take the points in this one here with the Nuggets. Keep it close.
I think the plus six is attractive. What's interesting, though, and this is always true, like we know this, the regular season and the postseason aren't the same. What Phoenix did to them in the postseason, I don't know what Denver's meant to do to be competitive. It almost is just banking on Phoenix being like, nah, we don't actually want to obliterate this team into outer space, right? Like, that's what we saw last year from Phoenix. It's the playoffs. It's winning time. It's go time. Let's go out here and go. That's going to be interesting to see their approach. Again, we talked about it. DeAndre Ayton is going to be a main figure in this game. The points prop for him is 15.5. His rebound prop is 10.5 with plus juice to the number. Also, a lot of people are going to be taking their looks at Nikola Jokic here. Points plus rebounds plus assists, 45.5. This is a guy, obviously, who last year won himself an MVP, was unbelievable every step of the way. Even in that series against Phoenix, he was giving it his all. For the series, averaged 25, 13, and 6. So there's some legitimate plays there. My one big thing I remember from the series as well, though, Donnie, is just Chris Paul really doing whatever he wanted. CP3, maybe a three-point shot prop, maybe an assist prop, could be a little bit attractive here in this game.
Yeah, it should be a good one also. And keep in mind, I really love the bench for Phoenix. You saw it come alive in the playoffs last year. And you're talking about Landry Shamet, Cam Payne, and I used to say Cam Squared last year, right? Cameron Payne and Cam Johnson. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that, because you have a lot of three balls that need to go down, Kevin. So these are one of the teams here, the Phoenix Suns, that when we take a look at 3x2s, if they're available, they're a fun team. Why? Because they will fire three-pointers and get them early. Good game on deck tonight. Looking forward to it.
As far as 3x2 goes, Milwaukee and Brooklyn. Listen, if you're not going to hit the 3x2, it is what it is. Don't make the second three 4 seconds after the 3-minute mark passes, though. Mm-hmm. Nobody. And then finish 3 points short of total. Oh, what a frustrating game that was. We pause the NBA. Heisman talks around the corner. Hot or not up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hot or not time here on the early line, and we started off with the Heisman race. A race that right now has its top contender questionable for some weekend action. Matt Corral, he is a co-favorite with Bryce Young. CJ Stroud is the third choice and the only other player that is sub 20-1 to win this award. Stroud is 7-1. You don't have to go too far down the board, though, to find a player who very recently entered the fray and took over a starting job, and that's Caleb Williams, the Oklahoma quarterback, at 50-1. Only 8 players with shorter odds than Caleb Williams to win the Heisman. Donnie, hot or not, Caleb Williams can win the Heisman.
I'm going to go not on this one here because a lot of the times this is about a statistical award, which means that you have to be throwing flames from game one all the way to game 12, because at the end of the season, when so many people vote on the Heisman and don't actually watch these players but just look at the final statistics, I don't know if they're going to be able to match up. Now, he can stack up some pretty good ones here over the next couple weeks in the week Big 12. But after that, he's going to have to run the table. He's going to have to get his team into the, obviously, it looks like he's going to line up for that Big 12 championship, win that, and then see everybody else take a stumble. But also keep in mind here, in the race of 2021 Heisman, this is one of the weaker ones that we've seen, right? You usually have a stone-cold winner up top and, you know, a dominant guy leading the way and maybe a guy that can catch him. You know, Matt Corral, plus 175 at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Bryce Young, 175. CJ Stroud, 7-1. Not that exciting here because you don't have a runaway. Most of the time you have that Heisman Trophy leading guy, Kevin, on an unbeaten team that's by far the most dominant in the NCAAs. Obviously, they're not Ole Miss. Alabama's a great football team, but they're not number one in the country. Georgia is. CJ Stroud, it almost seems like Ohio State is that forgotten team once they lost to Oregon. Even though they're probably going to be a player and make it into the college football playoff, it's almost like we've already written them off as well. Kenny Pickett out of Pittsburgh, having a nice season, but it's Pittsburgh here. Most people won't be able to pick him out of a lineup. Say, hey, right. Kenny Pickett, who's he even played for? What's he look like? Most people don't know. Ritter's an interesting one to me, Kevin, at 20-1, because he is still up there. People, you know, the little engine that could, Cincinnati, even though they're a really good big football program, making it into the college football playoff, he's going to get a boost. I just don't see it, Kevin. 50-1 is a decent price on him, but I don't think he can win the Heisman parachuting in. If he was there all season long, yes, but maybe coming in middle of the season or so, I don't think he can get there at 50-1.
If he was there all season long, he'd be the favorite. And I think the reason I agree with you, Donnie, is Caleb Williams presents something that I'm struggling to even remember another Heisman contender being able to present to the table. Because you're right. It's usually just about big, gaudy numbers, and then you factor in best teams, right? And you've got Bryce Young, big numbers on Alabama. You've got Matt Corral, big numbers. They're like the, you know, top 13 in the country, give or take. CJ Stroud putting up legitimate numbers, but they lost to Oregon so early. The weak class helps. The thing about Caleb Williams, Donnie, is he gets to say, I saved Oklahoma's season. If they are an unbeaten Big 12 champion and finish number 2 in the country, which is where I think they would land, by the way, if that ends up being the case, if not number 1, depending on how Alabama-Georgia SEC title game played out, that's where I think Caleb Williams kind of changes the deal here on a Heisman. I can't remember, Donnie, maybe you can, where a guy comes in, everybody was like, yeah, Oklahoma's losing a game, man. You can tell. Spencer Rattler is going to cost them a game. And by the way, he did against Texas. They were down 28 in that game. They were going to lose, fall out of the top 5. It was going to be difficult for them to climb out of it. And Caleb Williams right then and there save them. I think, Donnie, why Caleb does have an actual chance here, despite the fact that he would be capped out at, you know, 7.5 games playing in a Big 12 title game on top of everything else, is he is presenting an argument that nobody else in this field possibly can.
You're right. And also, let's keep in mind, This has been a crazy football season already, where we are going to have a big-time fight on who actually gets into the college football playoff, which means we don't have a lot of spectacular teams. Now, there's nobody really on Georgia that we're looking for, per se, that's going to be a Heisman Trophy winner when it looks like they're going to be unbeaten heading into the SEC championship game. Let's take a look at Matt Corral for Ole Miss. What happens if they lose another game? Bryce Young, Alabama, they already lost once. What happens if they get tripped up and he's got two losses before we even get to the SEC title game? C.J. Stroud, 7-1, same thing. What happens if Ohio State loses again before the end of the regular season, which leaves up to Desmond Ridder at 20-1? Does he take that next leap and say, well, we're not going to give the Heisman Trophy? This guy's unbeaten here with Cincinnati and a top-two football team against a team that's lost two games here and some underachieving players. But also, that's where Caleb Williams' stock can rise. If those guys are losing, you have to take a look and say, now, wait a second here. Bryce Young's got two losses. Corral's got two losses. Stroud has two losses. Caleb Williams came in and saved Oklahoma's season, and they are the number two or number three team now overall in the country. That's where his chance comes in. But in order for that to happen, those guys have to fall at the top. Not so much they can throw four or five touchdown passes a game, but if they have two losses, that's going to be damaging for them to try to win this thing.
And I'll add this as well on Caleb Williams. Last week, right, 361 yards of total offense, five total touchdowns against TCU. That was amazing. What do you think he's going to do against Kansas? Their team total, Donnie, is in the 50s against the Jayhawks. And you might think to yourself, now what does that matter? They're playing Kansas. He is going to likely have another 300 yards of offense, five to six total touchdowns, and is going to all of a sudden have Oklahoma. Whoa, all right, this is it. This is an absolute Death Star. And Kansas is garbage. Make no mistake about it. They give up 43 a game. Yep. But that is going to be something where, Donnie, I think we look at Caleb Williams' odds next week. I'm not going to go as far as to say they're cut in half, but he's 50-1. I think he could get himself inside the top five, though, odds-wise, if he goes out there and dominates Kansas the way he's favored to do.
You're correct, and that's a great take by you, because the simple fact is when you're betting odds, most people tell you, get the best odds you can possibly have. There's no way that when we start the show next week after this weekend, Caleb Williams is going to be 55-1, 60-1 to win the Heisman. He's going to have a big day. People are going to recognize. And also, Kevin, when we talked about the schedule for OU, where I said, boy, Spencer Rattler's got to be really kicking himself for not playing well against Texas because the next three games are stat patterns. That's going to happen here. So if you're looking from just an odds perspective at 50-1, it's probably not going to get any better than this. So if you like Caleb Williams, this is your day to go out and get him.
Certainly something to track. Another awards race that I want to talk about here. This one, though, in the NFL, Donnie, the Defensive Player of the Year. A little bit earlier into the season, I remember making the comment to you, hey, man, I think Trayvon Diggs is going to be able to win Defensive Player of the Year. We kind of talked about the position and whether or not that was plausible. Well, after last week's game against the Dallas Cowboys, where he had another interception, his second pick six of the year, he has seven on the season. Next closest is three. He has an interception in all six Cowboys games this year. Sits right now as the third choice on the board at plus 550. Garrett and T.J. Watt ahead of Trayvon Diggs. Donnie, hot or not, Diggs should be the favorite right now for Defensive Player of the Year.
I'm actually going to go hot on this one, Kevin. And not that I do believe he, you know, is going to end up winning this award, but you're talking about a, you know, body of over the first 6 to 7 games of the season. He's been very good. Now, Myles Garrett, who leads it at plus 350, had that monster sack game, 4 to 5 sacks. And, you know, leading the NFL in sacks is usually the thing that we look at. The same way we equate to the MVP award on offense, it's always a quarterbacking award. It just seems this one is built for defensive ends because that's what we look for, you know, sacks and big plays, big moments in games. You get 15, 16, 17 sacks. That puts you into it. But in order for a cornerback to do something to win the Defensive Player of the Year, it has to be historic, Kevin. And you're telling me right now that Trayvon Diggs is averaging an interception a game, touchdowns. The Dallas Cowboys are a good football team. And he's only in third place right now at a plus 550 at the FanDuel Sportsbook, followed by T.J. Watt at 5-1 and Myles Garrett at plus 350. That doesn't add up because, to me, the best of the season, statistic-wise, has already come from Trayvon Diggs. So what happens over the next 2 weeks, Kevin? Now, they're going to be all for the bye week, and then they come back, and let's just say over the next 2 weeks he doesn't get an interception. Does that turn into plus 550 to 750 to 1050 just because he's not getting interceptions? Because you track usually, Kevin, how good a defensive back is by the fact that he doesn't have interceptions. That doesn't make any sense. What do you mean? No, that means that you're so good, everybody is locked up and they're not throwing your way. So the fact that he's still getting opportunities is key. But if he's that good of a defensive back, Kevin, and you say, well, he's going to have note, 15, 16 interceptions on the year. He has to continue what he's actually doing. I don't think that's going to be the case. And everybody looks at stats. A really good sack artist, T.J. Watt, Myles Garrett, they're going to continue to pile those up because you have an opportunity. Why? Every single time the quarterback drops back to pass. But as a cornerback, if you're good, you don't have an opportunity every time he drops back to pass because they're not even looking your direction anymore.
So the interesting thing, and it's a great point you make there, is people are throwing on Diggs with some success, but over time he's making plays. Like if you look at the yardage allowed, the passer ratings and things of that nature, there has been success found on Trayvon Diggs. But you're banking on a lot of people reading Pro Football Focus articles, it feels like, for this guy not to be your favorite for the award. Donnie, Stephon Gilmore won Defensive Player of the Year in 2019. He had six picks. Trayvon Diggs has seven. What are we doing? Like, I get it. Myles Garrett, eight sacks. T.J. Watt has seven. Both unbelievable players. But I'm not saying whether or not Diggs wins it. Who should be the favorite? Right now, season ends today. I think Trayvon Diggs might walk away with the unanimous Defensive Player of the Year. And if this is where we talk about awards, listen, there's a lot of seasons I would have given LeBron James the MVP, but I can't bet on who I would have handed an award. We're talking about who would win it right now. Honey, Trayvon Diggs is the story. Not Myles Garrett's eight sacks on the 3-3 Browns, not T.J. Watt's seven sacks on the 3-3 Steelers. It's Trayvon Diggs having an interception in every single game, multiple pick sixes on the 5-1 America's Team Dallas Cowboys. I cannot believe he is still not the favorite. He's going into the bye week as well, which is interesting because if he doesn't get an interception in his last game, like, do you even buy Trayvon Diggs now at plus 550, even if we both think he should be shorter, because maybe it just does keep working back here on the FanDuel Sportsbook?
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. And again, he's fighting the uphill battle, but if he does finish with 15 interceptions, he will be the MVP on defense, even if you're right, the metrics don't add up. We like to see statistics the same way that if T.J. Watt doesn't play the run but ends up with 21 sacks, oh, he's the best player I ever saw out there. He's a sack artist. Well, you still have to play both ways and hold up your end of the bargain, but we bet on MVPs, and the people vote on MVPs by gaudy statistics. It doesn't matter how they got there. If you told me Derrick Henry is going to win the MVP, and said, boy, he can't block to save his life in pass protection, but he runs for 2,300 yards. You know what? He's still the MVP because his statistics are gaudy. And also, you are right. The Dallas Cowboys, the most expensive franchise in the entire world, he's making big plays in primetime for them. He gets a boost for that.
But you mentioned Derrick Henry. Let me just pivot here because we don't have enough time, I think, to get into kind of some more Cleveland Browns stuff. Derrick Henry is 30-1 to win NFL MVP. In front of him are all offensive players, and yet he is plus 300, by far and away the favorite, to win Offensive Player of the Year. This is, again, we taught, like, the Offensive Player of the Year award has just changed, Donnie. This, like, everyone says MVP is a quarterback award. Offensive Player of the Year is a wide receiver, tight end, running back award now. Derrick Henry's 3-1. I don't know anybody that even has a chance to catch him in this award because this one doesn't go to quarterbacks anymore.
No, never goes to quarterbacks. That's just the way it sets up. It's like the Maxwell Award in college and the Heisman Trophy winner. They're always two different players. How is that possible? Just the way it is. Just the way it is.
It's just the way it is. We take a break here on the early line. Close out hour number one after this quick break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Red Radio Network.
Closing out hour number one here on the early line. We've got a little boost action tonight on the FanDuel Sportsbook for a Wednesday college game. We had Tuesday college last week, which was a legitimate game there between App State and Louisiana. App State back in action, playing the 14th team in the country, Coastal Carolina. Coastal is a 5.5-point favorite on the road here against App State. The boost, Donnie, is for Coastal Carolina to win both the first half and the game here against App State. Plus 130 payout.
Yeah, it feels like a correlation, right? You know, if you're probably up at the half, you're probably going to win the football game. And, oh, yeah, have we mentioned that Coastal's won every game they already played so far? And it's not as if saying, hey, you know, I'm really worried about that Coastal offense. Can they move the football, you know, going up to the Rock and Boone, North Carolina, to take on, you know, App State in this one? Well, let's take a look at their last three games, Kevin. 53-3, that's a 50-point margin. Okay. 59-6, that's over a 50-point margin. And then, boy, they really struggled against Arkansas State. Show up, guys, on the road. You only put up 52 in that game, winning 52-20. It's one of those where you look at the offensive numbers also in the last two games. This is where we talk about, we joke by Urban Meyer's like, hey, give me 250 on the ground, 250 in the air. Take a look at these guys versus UMass. 312 on the ground, 246 in the air, 275 on the ground, 282 in the air. And the last game they just played, I don't even know this was possible in college football. 294 on the ground, 391 in the air. Sign me up on this boost. My goodness.
The really interesting thing is App State was miserable last week against Louisiana, 41-13. So now you see it's 5.5, and you want to bet Coastal. You want to bet them badly. I think the boost provides you a lot of opportunities. Last year on the road, App State were up at the break, and Coastal was able to kind of finish it out there in the fourth quarter. But this might be a spot where everyone's trying to be smartest man in the room, and they backed the Mountaineers, and the Chanticleers aren't that good. It doesn't surprise me if Coastal absolutely blasts these guys here tonight. Interesting spot on the boost. We're talking Target player props to start hour number two.